Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So you brought us a fascinating stack of analysis today, and it's all focused on harmony and its token, one.
That's right. And this project is it's really a perfect snapshot of what's happening right now in decentralized finance.
It really is. You've got this brilliant engineering on one side meeting just brutal market reality on the other.
Exactly.
So our mission today is to get past the headlines, you know, and really understand the deep internal tensions within this platform.
Mm-hmm.
We need to figure out why Harmony's foundational tech, which is, I mean, genuinely pioneering stuff for a layer one, is also being held back by these huge, almost catastrophic security events. And of course, the fierce competition.
Yeah, that competition is a major factor.
We want the full picture, the pros and the cons, to give you a shortcut to being really well informed. Okay, let's unpack this. When we talk about Harmony, what are we even looking at? What are the technical foundations that, you know, make this project worth discussing in the first place?
Well, we're basically dissecting what I call a classic high-tech, high-risk profile.
Yeah.
Harmony was built from the ground up to address the core problem facing every blockchain, scalability.
Right.
So it's a high-speed sharded layer one platform. It was designed specifically for dApps. So decentralized applications that just can't tolerate slow speeds or, you know, those crazy high fees you see on older networks.
And that speed and low cost, that's the hook, right? That's what any new network needs to lure developers away from the big players. But a lot of projects claim they're fast.
They all do.
What makes Harmony's approach different? Why does the analysis call their tech pioneering?
The difference is really in their architecture. They were pioneers in something called state sharding. And sharding itself is, I mean, it's notoriously difficult to get right.
We hear that analogy all the time, right? Turning a single road into a multi-lane highway. But that kind of glosses over the complexity, doesn't it?
Oh, completely. It's much, much harder than just adding lanes.
Right.
With state sharding, you're not just splitting up the transactions. You're splitting the entire network's database across multiple independent chains or shards. And the really difficult part isn't just running those in parallel.
It's making them talk to each other.
Exactly. It's ensuring they can communicate securely and efficiently.
Hmm.
I mean, you have to solve cross-shard communication, making sure a transaction on shard A can interact with data on shard B instantly, reliably.
All while a hacker can't just, you know, focus all their power on one tiny shard and take it down.
That's the key. And Harmony was one of the very first live mainnets to actually pull that off. It's a huge engineering feat. And it's what allowed them to hit thousands of transactions by second, TPS.
So that parallel processing power is the engine. And the stuff users actually see, the speed, the low cost, that all flows directly from it. The analysis mentions ultra-fast finality. How critical is that, like, two-second finality in the real world?
It's everything. It's the difference between an app that feels sluggish and one that feels seamless. When we say ultra-fast finality, we mean a transaction is confirmed, it's irreversible, in about 2 seconds.
And they get that using their fast Byzantine fault tolerance consensus, FBFT.
Right. And just think about, like, a Web3 game where you need instant confirmation of an action, or high-frequency trading in DeFi. You can't wait 30 seconds or a minute like on some other networks. It just kills the user experience.
2 seconds makes it competitive with, like, Visa.
It really does.
Ah.
And then you pair that speed with near-zero costs. We're talking transactions that are typically less than a cent.
That's the other crucial piece.
It is. Predictable, negligible fees are... they're non-negotiable for anything high volume. If you're building an app where users make dozens of tiny transactions, you just can't have fees spiking to several dollars. Harmony solved that.
So, okay, world-class tech, high performance, but that doesn't guarantee a win. Let's move to how they actually tried to build their ecosystem. The analysis says they focused heavily on connectivity.
Yeah, they realized pretty quickly that building a better mousetrap isn't enough. You have to connect it to everything else. And that starts with the crucial decision to be EVM compatible.
That's interesting. If their underlying tech with the sharding is so new, why lean on Ethereum's virtual machine? Why not build their own unique environment?
They could have.
Yeah.
But it would have taken years, probably billions of dollars, to get the same developer interest. By being EVM compatible, they immediately lowered the barrier to entry to zero for that huge existing pool of Ethereum developers.
It's a survival tactic.
It's a brilliant tactical move.
Mm.
Developers can just port their existing dApps over, use familiar tools like MetaMask, all without learning a new programming language. It's about bootstrapping your own ecosystem using the incumbent's infrastructure.
Makes perfect sense. Now, what about their decentralization strategy? This effective proof of stake or EPOS, this isn't just your standard POS, right?
No, it's designed to actively fight against that centralization we see in a lot of proof of stake networks where, you know, a few big whales end up controlling everything.
So what's fascinating about it? How does it work?
It works by dynamically adjusting the minimum stake you need to become a validator. It's a constant balancing act.
How so?
Well, if a few large validators start capturing too much of the total staked one, the EPO system will actually increase the minimum they need to stake to earn rewards.
Oh, okay. So it gets harder for the big guys.
Exactly. And at the same time, it makes it easier and more attractive for smaller, newer stakers to join the pool.
Yeah.
The whole point, the aim, is to maximize the number of decentralized validators over the long term.
So it's an active mechanism to keep the network healthy and distributed.
It is. And then, to wrap up the positives, they put a huge emphasis on interoperability through cross-chain bridges, the big one being the Horizon Bridge, connecting to Ethereum, Bitcoin, and BNB chain.
Which is the lifeblood of DeFi. You can't be an island.
You can't. If you're an island, you die. That bridge was absolutely necessary to tap into the billions of dollars of assets and users on those other chains. So, you know, technically and strategically, Harmony ticked almost every box.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. We've laid out this strong technical case, but the analysis makes it impossible to ignore the huge real-world failures that just temper all of it.
Mm.
And the analysis focuses heavily on one specific event that just seems to have shattered confidence. Let's talk about that shadow hanging over the project. The Horizon Bridge hack in June 2022.
That was the defining blow. I mean, a catastrophic blow to Harmony's reputation.
We're talking a huge amount of money.
A staggering amount. The hack resulted in the loss of approximately $100 million in assets. And this wasn't just some small glitch. It was a total failure of the one component, the bridge, that was supposed to bring in all that value.
And the consequences of that went way beyond just the money.
Oh, they were immense and lasting. That single event just destroyed liquidity. Total Value Locked, or TVL, plummeted immediately and has never recovered.
Yeah.
And analysts cite it over and over as the main reason institutions won't touch them.
And why developers are wary.
Exactly. You can build the fastest network in the world, but if the vault door is easy to pick, no one's going to store their money there.
So the fallout wasn't just users leaving. The analysis says developers left too, especially with the bear market hitting right after.
Absolutely.
Right.
The moment trust is broken like that, developers look for more stable ground. And Harmony is now struggling massively to keep talent against really fierce competition. You know, Solana, Avalanche, Polygon.
And if the builders leave.
If the builders leave, then adoption and the utility for the one token just crater. The technical prowess becomes meaningless without a community actually using it.
That's a perfect transition to the structural and financial risks, the things that aren't about hackers, but about the design of the network itself. Let's start with something that worries any long-term holder, the tokenomics.
Right.
The analysis says Harmony uses a perpetual annual inflation mechanism. It issues 441 million new one tokens every single year. That just sounds like guaranteed dilution.
It is guaranteed dilution. That number 441 million is a fixed expense. It's what they use to pay stakers and validators for securing the network.
But don't they burn fees to offset that?
They do. Here's the critical dynamic, though. They burn transaction fees, but that burn rate is totally variable. It depends entirely on network activity.
Mm.
So the system only reaches, you know, an equilibrium where inflation is offset if usage is perpetually high enough to burn 441 million one tokens every year. And given the low activity post-hack, that's just not happening.
So there's constant downward pressure on the token's value.
Continuous structural downward pressure. It's a mechanism that rewards security in the short term, but it really risks undermining the financial stability for holders if that mass adoption stalls. It's like being on a treadmill you can't get off of.
You have to run faster just to stay in the same place.
Precisely.
Okay, next, there's a serious paradox the analysis brings up in the governance section. The network has something called validator-controlled asset freezing. I mean, on the surface, that sounds like a good emergency tool.
It does.
But doesn't that just fly in the face of the entire philosophy of decentralization?
This is where it gets really philosophical. What's fascinating here is the trade-off they decided to make. That ability for validators to collectively freeze assets is it's meant to be a nuclear option, a fail-safe to stop a catastrophic theft in real time.
Like the hack they had.
Exactly. However, security labs and crypto purists immediately flag this as a critical centralization risk. The moment a group has the power to freeze your assets, the network loses its core property. Immutability.
It's no longer trustless.
It creates a single point of political control. It contradicts that ideal that code is law and that no one should be able to interfere with your property. It's the ultimate centralization risk masquerading as a security fix.
And finally, a really practical consequence of all this, the low activity, the security concerns, is losing market access. Yeah. The analysis mentions specific exchange delistings like Exmo and FameX in late 2025.
Yeah, delistings are a massive negative signal. When exchanges remove a token, it just crushes liquidity. It gets harder, more expensive to trade, which means more volatility.
And it looks bad.
It looks terrible. It reduces the token's legitimacy and visibility. It's a clear message to the market that the project is losing momentum.
So if we connect all these disparate pieces to the bigger picture, what's the final synthesis here? What does this deep dive show us?
The analysis paints a really clear picture. This is a classic case study in execution failure, undermining technical brilliance. Harmony built this world-class, pioneering, scaling tech sex. The state sharding, the two-second finality.
They solved the hard problems.
They did. But that incredible technical achievement is made vulnerable by these huge execution risks, primarily the $100 million hack and that resulting loss of trust.
And when you combine that with the structural financial problems like the perpetual inflation,
it creates a very, very difficult path forward.
So what does this all mean for you as you're evaluating these sources? It really underscores that you have to analyze tech not just on its theory, but on its real-world history, especially when it comes to security, governance, and how a project recovers from a disaster.
We can even connect this back to the EVM compatibility. It was a strategic move, yes, but it also meant relying on bridges. And those bridges, as we saw, are now known attack vectors.
So you have to weigh the competitive need against the security risk that created their greatest crisis.
Exactly.
I think the most profound tension in all of this analysis is that need for trust after the Horizon hack, put right up against the existence of those validator-controlled asset freezing tools.
Mm-hmm. They tried to fix a security problem with centralization.
And that raises a crucial question for you, the listener, to really think about. In this world of decentralized finance, where immutability is the core value, how much control is okay for the sake of safety before a system just undermines the very definition of decentralization?
Yeah, it forces you to ask, is a system that can freeze your assets, even for a good reason, truly decentralized? Or is it just a distributed centralized system with extra steps?
We'll leave you with that thought to explore that very fine line between necessary emergency controls and the immutable nature that defines this whole industry. Thanks for joining us for the deep dive.